that it did make him feel good to know that he had helped people for a change instead of hurting them. He understood a little of what Nadine must feel when she helped people with her herbs. He had been warned of a wizard's need for balance. There was balance in all things, but especially in magic. He could no longer eat meat. It made him sick, and suspected it was the gift seeking balance for the killing he sometimes had to do. He liked to think that helping people was part of the balance in being a war wizard. Sullen people, going about their business, moved to the side of the cramped street, tramping through the dirty snow still in the sheltered places in order to squeeze past the soldiers. Grim-looking groups of older boys and young men watched warily and then vanished around corners as Richard and his escort approached. Richard absently touched the gold-worked leather pouch on his belt. It contained white sorcerer's sand that had been in the pouch when he found the belt in the keep. Sorcerer's sand was the crystallized bones of the wizards who had given their lives into the towers of perdition, separating the old and new worlds. It was a sort of distilled magic. White sorcerer's sand gave power to spells drawn with it, good and evil. The proper spell drawn in white sorcerer's sand could invoke the keeper. He touched the other gold-worked pouch on his belt. A little leather purse tied securely inside contained black sorcerer's sand. He had gathered that sorcerer's sand himself from one of the towers. No wizard since the towers were built had been able to gather any black sorcerer's sand. It could only be taken from a tower by one with subtractive magic. Black sorcerer's sand was the counter to the white. They nullified each other. Even one grain of the black would contaminate a spell drawn with the white, even one drawn to invoke the keeper. He had used it to defeat Darkin Rawl's spirit and send him back to the underworld. Prelate Annalena had told him to guard the black sand with his life, that a spoonful of it was worth kingdoms. He possessed several kingdoms worth. He never let the little leather purse containing the black sand out of his sight or his reach. Children, layered with ragged clothes for warmth against the cold spring day, played catch the fox in the tightly hemmed street, running from doorway to doorway, giggling with glee at the prospect of finding the fox, and more so at seeing the impressive procession coming up their very own street. Even seeing happy children didn't bring a smile to Richard's face.
"This one, Lord Rawl," General Curson said.
The general lifted a thumb to a door on the right, set back a few feet into the clabbered face of a building. The faded red paint was flaking off the bottom of the door where the weather worked on it the most. A small sign said, "Latherton Rooming House." A big, stocky man inside didn't look up from a chair behind a rickety table set with dry biscuits and a bottle. He stared at nothing with red-rimmed eyes. His hair was disheveled and his clothes rumpled. He seemed in a daze. Beyond him was a stairway, and beside that, a narrow hall that ran back into darkness.
"Closed," he murmured.
"Are you Silas Latherton?" Richard asked, his gaze sweeping the clutter of dirty clothes and bedsheets awaiting washing. A half-dozen empty ewers sat against the wall along with a stack of wash rags. The man peered up from behind a puzzled frown.
"Here, who are you? You look familiar."
"I'm Richard Rawl. Perhaps you see a resemblance to my brother, Drefn."
"Drefn?"
The man's eyes widened.
"Lord Rawl!"
His chair rasped noisily against the floor as he shoved it back and stood to bow.
"Forgive me, I didn't recognize you. I've never seen you before. I didn't know that the healer was your brother. I beg the Lord Rawl's forgiveness."
For the first time, Silas noticed the dark-haired Mord Sith at Richard's side, the muscled general at the other side, Richard's two huge bodyguards towering behind him, and the phalanx of soldiers spilling out the doorway and into the street. He raked his greasy hair back and stood up straighter.
"Show me the room where the woman was murdered," Richard said.
Silas Latherton bowed twice before hurrying to the stairs, tucking in his shirt as he went. Checking over his shoulder to make sure Richard was following, he climbed the stairs two at a time. They objected to his weight with creaks and groans. He finally came to a halt before a door partway down a narrow hall. With the walls painted red, the candles at either end of the hall provided little illumination. The place stank.
"In here, Lord Rawl," Silas said.
When he moved to open the door, Rayna snatched his collar and pulled him back out of the way. She planted him in place with a sinister look. A look like that from Raina was enough to give an angry cloud pause. She opened the door and, Aegil in hand, stepped into the room before Richard. Richard waited a moment while Raina checked the room for threat. It was easier than objecting. Silas stared at the floor while Richard and General Curson went into the little room. Ulick and Egan took up posts beside the door and folded their massive arms. There wasn't much to see. A bed, a small pine chest beside it, and a washstand. A dark stain discolored the unfinished spruce floorboards. The bloodstain ran under the bed and covered nearly the entire floor. The size of it didn't surprise him. The general had told him what had been done to the woman. The water in the washbasin looked to be at least half blood. The rag hanging over its side was red with it. The killer had washed the blood from himself before he left. He must either be neat, or, more likely, didn't want to walk out past Silas Latherton, dripping blood. Richard opened the pine chest. It contained orderly stacks of clothes and nothing else. He let the lid drop back down. Richard leaned a hand against the doorway. No one heard anything. Silas shook his head. A woman is mutilated like that, has her breasts cut off and is stabbed hundreds of times, and no one heard a thing. Richard realized that his exhaustion was putting an edge to his voice. His mood wasn't helping either, he guessed. Silas swallowed.
She'd been gagged, Lord Roll. Her hands were tied, too.
Richard scowled. She must have kicked her feet. No one heard her kicking. If someone was slicing me up and I was gagged and my hands were tied, I'd have kicked the washstand over at least. She must have kicked her feet, trying to get someone's attention.
I didn't hear it if she did. None of the other women heard it either. At least, they never mentioned it, and I'd think they would have come got me if they'd heard anything like that. If there was trouble, they always came to me. They always did. They know I'm not shy about protecting them.
Richard rubbed his eyes. The prophecy wouldn't leave him be. He had a headache.
Bring the other women here. I want to talk to them. They left me after...
Silas gestured vaguely.
Except Bridget.
He hurried to the end of the hall and knocked on the last door. A woman with rumpled red hair peered out after he spoke quietly to her. She withdrew back into her room and in a moment emerged, pulling a cream-colored robe closed. She tossed a quick knot in the tie as she followed Silas up the hall to Richard. Standing in the belly of a stinking whorehouse, Richard was getting more angry with himself by the moment. Despite trying to be objective, he had begun to let himself be happy about having a brother. He was beginning to like Drefin. Drefin was a healer. What could be more noble? Silas and the woman bowed. They both looked the way Richard felt, dirty, tired, and distraught.
Did you hear anything?
Bridget shook her head. Her eyes looked haunted.
Did you know the woman who died?
Rose, Bridget said. I only met her once for a few minutes. She just came here yesterday.
Do either of you have any idea who murdered her?
Silas and Bridget shared a look.
We know who did it, Lord Rawl,
Silas said, a smoldering tone welling in his voice.
Fat Harry.
Fat Harry? Who's that? Where can we find him? For the first time, Silas Latherton's features twisted in anger.
I shouldn't have let him come here anymore. The women didn't like him.
None of us girls would take him anymore, Bridget said. He drinks, and when he drinks, he gets mean. There's no need to put up with that, not with the army.
Her words died out as she glanced to the general. She resumed with a different tack.
We have enough clients nowadays. We don't have to put up with mean drunks like Fat Harry.
The women all told me that they wouldn't see Harry no more, Silas said. When he came last night, I knew that they would all say no. Harry was real insistent and seemed sober enough. So I asked Rose if she'd see him, as she was new and didn't know she was in danger, Richard finished.
It wasn't like that, Silas said defensively. Harry didn't seem to be drunk. I knew the other women wouldn't take him, though, sober or not, so I asked Rose if she was interested. She said she could use some money. Harry was the last one with her. She was found a little while later.
Where can we find this Harry?
Silas's eyes narrowed.
In the underworld, where he belongs.
You killed him?
No one saw who slit his fat throat. I wouldn't know who done it.
Richard glanced at the long knife tucked behind Silas's belt. He didn't blame the man. If they had captured Fat Harry, he would get the same for his crime as had already been done. Although he would have had a trial first, and he could have confessed, just to be sure it was he who had done it. That was why they used confessors, to be sure they had convicted the guilty man. Once touched by her magic, a criminal would confess all that he had done. Richard wouldn't want Colin to hear what had been done to this woman, Rose, especially not from the beast who had done it. It made him sick to his stomach to think of Colin having to touch a man like that, a man who had killed a woman in such a brutal fashion. He feared he would have killed Harry himself to keep Colin from having to touch the flesh of a man like that. He knew she had touched other men who were no better. He didn't want her to ever have to do that again. He knew it had to hurt her to hear such perverted crimes confessed in detail. He feared to think what terrible memories haunted her and visited her dreams. Richard forced his mind off it and looked at Bridget. "Why did you stay when the others ran off?" She shrugged.
"Some of them had children and feared for them. I don't fault them their fears, but we were always safe here. Silas has always been fair to me. I've been hurt other places, but never here. It wasn't Silas's fault that a crazy killer did this. Silas always respected our wishes when we said we wouldn't see a man again."
Richard felt his stomach tighten. "And you saw Drefin?"
"Sure. All the girls saw Drefin."
"All the girls," Richard repeated. He held a tight grip on his anger.
"Yeah, we all saw him. Except Rose. She never got a chance, 'cause she..."
"So, Drefin didn't have a favorite?" Richard had been hoping that Drefin had confined himself to one woman he liked, and that maybe she would be one who was healthy, at least. Bridget's brow wrinkled up.
"How can a healer have a favorite?"
"But I mean, was there one he preferred, or did he just take who was available?" The woman stuck a finger into her mat of red hair and scratched her scalp.
"I think you got the wrong idea about Drefin, Lord Rawl. He never touched us, in that way. He only came here to do his healing."
"He came here to heal?"
"Yeah,"
Bridget said. Silas nodded his agreement.
"After girls had something or other, rashes and sores and such. Most people who sell herbs and cures don't want to help our kind, so we just live with our ailments. Drefin told us how he wanted us to wash. He gave us herbs and unguents to put on the sores. He came twice before, real late after we was done, so as not to interfere with us earning a living. He checked on the girls' children, too. Drefin was special kind with the children. One had a bad cough, and he got better after Drefin gave him something to take. He came checking on us early this morning. After he saw one of the girls, he went to Rose's room to check on her. That's when he found her. He came flying out of her room after what he saw and was calling out." She pointed at the floor at Richard's feet. "Between throwing up. We all rushed out in the hall and saw him there, on his knees, heaved his guts out right there."
"So he didn't come here to... And he never..." Bridget guffawed.
"I offered. No charge, since he helped me and all with what he gave me. He said that that wasn't why he had come. He said he only wanted to help, that he was a healer. I offered, mind you, and I can be very persuasive."
She winked.
"But he said no. He has a real handsome smile, he does. Just like yours, Lord Rawl."
"Enter," came the response to Richard's knock. Drefin was kneeling before his array of candles set about on the table against the wall. His head was bowed and his hands were folded in supplication. "I hope I'm not interrupting," Richard said. Drefin looked back over his shoulder and then stood. His eyes reminded Richard of Darkon Rawl. Drefin had the same blue eyes with the same indefinably odd, unsettling look in them. Richard couldn't help being disquieted by them. It sometimes made him feel as if Darkon Rawl himself were staring at him. People who had lived in fear of Darkon Rawl were probably terrified when they looked into Richard's eyes, too. "What are you doing?" Richard asked.
"Praying to the good spirits to watch over the soul of someone."
"Whose soul?"
Drefin sighed. He looked tired and doleful. "The soul of a woman no one cared about."
"A woman named Rose?"
Drefin nodded. "How did you know about her?"
He waved off his own question. Forgive me, I wasn't thinking. You're the Lord Rawl. I expect you get reports of such things. Yes, well, I do hear about things. Richard spotted something new in the room. I see you've taken to brightening up the decor. Dreffen saw where Richard was looking and went to the chair beside the bed. He returned with a small pillow. He ran his fingers lovingly over the rose embroidered on it. This was hers. They didn't know where she came from, so Silas, he's the man who runs the house, Silas insisted I take this for the small help I offer the women there. I won't accept the money. If they had money to spare, they wouldn't be doing what they do. Richard wasn't an expert, but the embroidered rose looked to be done with care.
Do you think she made it?
Dreffen shrugged. Silas didn't know. Maybe she did. Maybe she saw it somewhere and bought it because it had a rose on it, like her name. He gently rubbed his thumb back and forth across the rose as he stared at it. Dreffen, what are you doing going to places like that? There's no shortage of people needing healing. We have soldiers here who were wounded down by the pit. There's plenty for you to do. Why were you going to whorehouses? Dreffen dragged a finger down the stem of green thread. I'm seeing to the soldiers. I go in my own time before people are up and need me.
But why go there at all?
Dreffen's eyes welled with tears as he stared at the rose on the pillow. My mother was a whore, he whispered. I am the son of a whore. Some of those women have children. I could have been any one of them. Just like Rose, my mother took the wrong man to her bed. No one knew Rose. No one knew who she was or where she came from. I don't even know my own mother's name. She wouldn't tell the healers she left me with, only that she was a whore. Dreffen, I'm sorry. That was a pretty stupid question. No, it was a perfectly logical question. No one cares about those women. I mean, cares about them as people. They get beaten bloody by the men who come to them. They catch terrible diseases. They're scorned by other people. Herb sellers don't want them coming into their shops. It gives them a reputation, and then decent people won't come around. Many of the things these women have, even I don't know how to cure. They suffer sad, lingering deaths, just for money. Some of them are drunks, and the men prostitute them and pay them with liquor. They're drunk all the time and don't know the difference. Some of them think they'll find a rich man and be his mistress. They think they will please him and gain his favor, like my mother. Instead, they have bastard children like me. Richard was mentally wincing. He had been ready to believe that Dreffen was an unfeeling opportunist.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I'm the son of that bastard, too.
Dreffen looked up and smiled. I guess so. At least your mother loved you. Mine didn't. She didn't even leave me her name.
Don't say that, Dreffen. Your mother loved you. She took you to a place where you would be safe, didn't she?
He nodded. And left me there with people she didn't know.
But she left you because she had to, so that you would be safe. Can you imagine how that must have hurt her? Can you imagine how it must have broken her heart to leave you with strangers? She must have loved you a great deal to do that for you.
Dreffen smiled. Wise words, my brother. With a mind like that, you might make something of yourself someday. Richard returned the smile. Sometimes we have to do desperate things to save the ones we love. I have a grandfather who has great admiration for acts of desperation. I think, with your mother, I'm beginning to understand what he means.
Grandfather?
My mother's father. Richard idly stroked a finger along the raised gold wire spelling out the word truth on the hilt of his sword.
One of the greatest men I've ever had the honor of knowing. My mother died when I was young, and my father, a man I thought was my father, was often gone on his business as a trader. Zed practically raised me. I guess I'm more Zed than anyone else.
Zed had the gift. Richard had inherited the gift not only from Darkin Rawl, but also from Zed, from his mother's side as well as his father's, from both bloodlines. Richard found comfort in knowing that the gift of a good man flowed in his veins and not just that of Darkin Rawl.
Is he still living?
Richard looked away from Dreffen's blue, Darkin Rawl eyes.
I believe he is,
I don't think anyone else does, but I do. Sometimes I feel like if I don't believe, then he will be dead. Jeffen laid a hand on Richard's shoulder.
Then keep believing. You may be right.
You're fortunate to have a family. I know, because I don't.
You do now, Jeffen.
You have a brother at least, and soon a sister-in-law.
Thanks, Richard. That means a lot to me.
How about you? I hear you have half the women in the palace chasing after you. Any of them special?
Jeffen smiled distantly. Girls, that's all.
Girls who think they know what they want and are impressed by foolish things that shouldn't matter. I see them all batting their eyelashes at you, too. Some people are drawn to power. People like my mother.
Me? You're seeing things.
Jeffen turned serious. Colin is beautiful. You're a fortunate man to have a woman of such substance and noble character. A woman like that only comes along once in a lifetime, and then only if the good spirits smile on you.
I know. The luckiest man alive.
Richard stared off, thinking about the prophecy and the things he had read in Kolo's journal.
Life wouldn't be worth living without her.
Jeffen laughed and slapped Richard on the back.
If you weren't my brother, and a good one besides, I'd steal her from you and have her for myself. On second thought, you better be careful. I may yet decide to have her.
Richard smiled with him.
I'll be careful.
Jeffen pointed an admonishing finger at Richard.
You treat her right.
I'd not know how to do otherwise. Richard swept a hand out, indicating the small, simple room, and changed the subject.
What are you still doing here? We can find you better quarters than this.
Jeffen gazed about at his room.
This is a king's room compared to my quarters at home. We live simply. This room is almost more ostentation than I can bear.
His brow drew down. It isn't what kind of house you have that matters. This is not happiness. It's what kind of mind you have, and how you care for your fellow man, what you can do to help others who can be helped by no one else. Richard adjusted the bands at his wrists. They made him sweat under the leather pads.
You're right, Jeffen.
He hadn't even realized it, but he had come to be used to his surroundings. Since he had left Heartland, he had seen many splendid places. His own home back in Heartland wasn't nearly as nice as this plain room, and he had been happy there. He had been happy being a woods guide. But, as Jeffen said, a person had to help others who could be helped in no other way. He was stuck with being Lord Rawl. Colin was the balance. Now all he had to do was find the Temple of the Winds before he lost it all. At least he had a woman he loved more than he would ever have thought possible. And now, too, he had a brother.
Jeffen, do you know the meaning of Rochmos?
I was taught that it's old Haidaharan, meaning divine wind.
Do you know Haidaharan?
Jeffen brushed back his tumbled-down blonde hair.
Just that word.
I hear that you're their leader. You've done well for yourself to become the leader of a community of healers.
It's the only life I've ever known. Being the high priest, though, mostly means that they have someone to blame when things go wrong. If someone we try to help doesn't get better, the healers point in my direction and say, "He is our leader, talk to him." Being high priest means I have to read the reports and records and try to explain to distraught relatives that we are only healers and we can't revoke the keeper's call.
Sounds more impressive than it is, really.
I'm sure you exaggerate.
I'm proud that you've done well.
What are the Rochmos? Where do they come from?
Legend has it that the Rochmos were founded thousands of years ago by wizards whose gift was for healing. The gift began dying out in the race of man, and wizards, especially ones gifted for healing, became more and more rare.
Jeffen told Richard the story of how the community of the Rochmos started to change as wizards began dying out. Worried that their work would die out with them, the healers, the wizard healers, decided to take in apprentices without the gift. Over time, there were fewer and fewer wizards to oversee the work, until long ago the last of the wizards died. It sounded to Richard much like reading in Kolo's journal how different the keep had been in that time long past when it was filled with wizards and their families.
"Now there are no gifted among us," Jeffen said.
The Roch Moss were taught many keys of health and healing, but we have nowhere near the talent of the wizards of old. We have no magic to aid us. We do what we can with the teachings the true healers of old passed down, but we can only do so much. It's a simple life, a hard life, but it has rewards that comforts of belongings can provide.
I understand. It must be the best feeling in the world to help people.
Jeffin's face took on a curious set.
What of you? What is your gift, your talent?
Richard looked away from Jeffin's eyes. His hand tightened on the hilt of his sword.
I was born a war wizard, he whispered. I have been named Purgrisa Ostracha, High Daharan for the Bringer of Death.
The room fell quiet. Richard cleared his throat.
I was pretty distraught by that, at first. But since then I've come to understand that being a war wizard means that I have been born to help others by protecting them from those who would enslave them, from those like our bastard father, Darkin Rawl.
I understand, Jeffin said into the uneasy silence.
Sometimes the best use of our ability is to kill, such as to end a life that has no hope but pain, or to end the life of one who would bring endless pain to others.
Richard rubbed a thumb over the symbols on the silver bands at his wrist.
Yes, I understand what you mean by that now. I don't think I did before. We both must do things that we don't like, but which must be done.
Jeffin smiled a small smile. Not many, other than my healers, ever understand it.
I'm glad you do. Sometimes killing is the greatest of charity. I'm careful to whom I speak those words. It is good to have my brother understand them.
The same with me, Jeffin.
Before Richard could ask more, they were interrupted by a knock at the door. Reyna poked her head in. Her long, dark braid fell forward over her shoulder.
Lord Rawl, do you have a moment?
What is it, Reyna?
Reyna rolled her eyes, indicating someone behind her.
Nadine wishes to see you. She seems upset about something and will only speak to you.
When Richard gestured, Reyna opened the door a little wider and Nadine pushed her way in, oblivious to Reyna's scowl.
Richard, you have to come with me.
She took up his hand in both of hers.
Please, please, Richard, come with me. There's someone here who desperately needs to see you.
Who? She looked to be genuinely troubled. She tugged on his hand.
Please, Richard.
Richard was still wary. Mind if I bring Jeffin along?
Of course not. I was going to ask that you did.
Let's go, then, if it's really important.
She held his hand tight and dragged him behind her. Chapter 28 Richard spotted Colin coming down the hall toward him. She frowned at seeing Nadine pulling him along by the hand. Jeffin, Reyna, Ulick, and Egan trailed behind him as they all wove their way past palace staff going about their chores and soldiers on patrol. Richard shrugged to Colin. Nadine glared at Colin before turning down the hall toward her room. He wondered what that was all about. Annoyed, Richard yanked his hand away from Nadine's grip, but kept following. Nadine skirted a walnut table against the wall beneath an old tapestry with a herd of white-tailed deer grazing before white-peaked mountains in the background. She checked over her shoulder to make sure Richard was still with her. Colin and Kara caught up. Colin fell in beside him.
Well, Kara said from behind as she stroked her thick braid, doesn't this look interesting?
Richard shot her a scowl. Nadine turned and impatiently snatched his hand again.
You promised. Come on.
I promised nothing. I said I'd go with you, Richard complained. I didn't say I would run.
Big strong Lord Rawl can't keep up with me,
Nadine taunted.
The woods guide I remember could walk faster than this when he was half asleep.
I am half asleep, he muttered.
The guards told me you were back and had gone to Jeffin's room, Colin whispered to him. I was on my way to meet you there. What's this business with Nadine?
Her whispered question was laced with aggravation. He noticed her quick glance to Nadine's hand gripping his.
Beats me. She wants me to see someone.
And must you hold her hand to do it?
She growled under her breath. He yanked his hand away again. Collins stole a quick peek at Drefin, back behind Kara and Raina. She twined her arm through Richard's.
How are you doing? What did you find out?
Richard put his hand over hers and gave it a squeeze.
Everything is fine, he whispered to her.
It wasn't what I thought. I'll tell you about it later.
What about the murderer? Has anyone found him yet?
Yes, someone found him and murdered him for his crime, Richard told her. What about the representatives? Did you take care of it? Her answer was a moment in coming.
Grenadin, Tigressa, and Penderson Reach surrendered. Jara may yet, but they wish to wait for 2 weeks for a sign from the sky.
Richard frowned.
Mardovia refused to join with us. They choose to remain neutral.
Richard jerked to a halt.
What?
Everyone marching behind almost lurched into him.
They refuse to surrender. They claim to be neutral.
The Order doesn't recognize neutrality. Neither do we. Didn't you tell them that?
Colin's face showed nothing.
Of course I did.
Richard hadn't meant to yell at her. He was angry at Mardovia, not her.
General Rybish is in the south. Maybe we could have him take Mardovia before the Order grinds them into carrion.
Richard, they were given a chance. They are now the walking dead. We can't waste the lives of our soldiers to take Mardovia just so that we might protect them. It would serve no purpose, and it would weaken our effort.
Nadine pushed between them and glared at Colin.
You talk to that evil Jagang. You know what he's like. Those people will all die if you lead them to the Order. You just don't care about the lives of innocent people. You're heartless.
From the corner of his eye, Richard saw a red flash as Kara's Ejeel spun up into her hand. Richard shoved Nadine on ahead of him. Colin is right. It just took a moment for it to sink in through my thick skull. Mardovia has chosen their own path. They must walk it. Now, if you want to show me someone, then show me. I have important things to do.
Nadine huffed, flipped her thick brown hair back over her shoulder, and marched on.
Kara and Raina were scowling at the back of her head. A scowl from a moored Sith was more often than not prelude to a serious consequence. Richard had probably just spared Nadine that consequence. Someday he was going to have to do something about Shota, before Colin tried. Richard leaned toward Colin.
I'm sorry. I'm dead tired and I just wasn't thinking.
She squeezed his arm.
You promised you would get some sleep, remember?
Soon as I see to this business with Nadine, whatever it is.
At the door to her room, Nadine snatched Richard's hand again and tugged him in. Before he could object, he saw the boy sitting on a red chair. Richard thought he recognized him as one of the Jala players he had watched. The boy was shuddering in tears. When he saw Richard coming into the room, he jumped down off the chair and swiped the floppy wool hat from his head of blonde hair. He stood crushing his hat in his fists, trembling expectantly, tears coursing down his face. Richard crouched down before the boy.
I'm Lord Rawl. I hear you need to see me.
What's your name? He wiped his nose. The tears kept coming.
Yannick.
And how, Yannick? What's the matter?
He could only get out the word brother before succumbing to gasping sobs. Richard took the boy in his arms and comforted him. He wept in racking sobs as he clung to Richard. His misery was heartbreaking.
Can you tell me what's the matter, Yannick?
Please, Father Rawl, my brother's sick. Real sick.
Richard stood the boy on his feet before him.
He is. What's he sick with?
I don't know,
Yannick cried.
We bought him herbs. We tried everything. He's so sick. He's just been getting worse since I came to see you before.
Since you came to see me before?
Yes, Nadine snapped. He came begging for your help a few days ago.
Nadine thrust a finger at Colin.
She sent him away.
Colin's face went crimson. Her jaw worked, but no words came out.
All she cares about are her armies and fighting wars and hurting people. She doesn't care about a miserable little boy who's sick. She would only care if he was some fancy important diplomat. She doesn't know what it is to be poor and sick.
With a glare, Richard froze Kara's advance. He turned and glared at Nadine.
That's enough.
Drefin laid a hand on Colin's shoulder.
I'm sure you had a good reason. You couldn't have known how sick his brother was. No one is blaming you.
Richard turned back to the boy.
Yannick, my brother here, Drefin, is a healer.
Take us to your brother and we'll see if we can't help him.
And I have herbs, Nadine said. I'll help your brother too, Yannick. We'll do everything we can. We promise.
Yannick wiped his eyes.
Please, Harry, keep his Rose sick.
Colin looked on the verge of tears. Richard put a hand tenderly to her back. He could feel her trembling. He feared how sick the boy's brother might be and wanted to spare her seeing it. He feared she might blame herself. Why don't you wait here while we see to this? Her wet, green eyes flashed up at him.
I'm going,
she said through gritted teeth. Richard gave up trying to remember the warren of narrow streets and twisting alleys they went down, and simply noted where the sun was in the sky in order to keep his bearings as Yannick led them through a maze of buildings and walled courtyards hung with laundry. Chickens flapped and squawked as they scattered out of the way. Some of the tiny, walled courtyards held a few goats, or sheep, or a pig or two. The animals seemed incongruous amid the tightly packed buildings. Overhead, people carried on conversations from opposing windows. Some leaned out on elbows to have a look at the procession led by a boy. It created quite a stir. Richard knew that it was the sight of Lord Rawl, dressed in his black war wizard's outfit with a gold cloak billowing out behind, and the Mother Confessor in her pristine white dress that was the object of wonder, rather than the knot of soldiers or two more Sith. Soldiers were common, and the city people probably didn't have a clue as to who the two women in brown leather were. People in the streets and alleyways pushed their carts of vegetables, wood, or household goods to the side to get out of the way. Others stood against the walls and watched, as if it were a miniature, impromptu parade unexpectedly coming through their neighborhood. At intersections, soldiers on patrol cheered their Lord Rawl and called out their thanks for his curing their ailment. Richard held a tight grip on Colin's hand. She hadn't spoken a word since they left the palace. He had made Nadine walk behind, between the two moored Sith. He hoped Nadine knew enough to keep her mouth shut. Yannick pointed.
Just up there.
They followed him as he turned from the street down a narrow alley between stone walls forming the bottom floors of houses, with wood above for the second story. Water dripping from melting snow overhead splashed mud from the alley a few feet up onto the stone. With one hand, Colin held Richard's, and with the other she held the hem of her dress up as she followed him down the line of boards laid in the mud. Yannick paused at a door under a small shed roof. People peered out windows to each side. When Richard caught up, Yannick opened the door and ran up the stairs, calling out for his mother. A door at the top of the stairs squeaked open. A woman in a brown dress and white apron stared down at the boy running up the stairs.
Ma! It's Lord Rawl! I brought Lord Rawl! The good spirits be praised, she said.
She rested a weary hand on her son's back as he threw his arms around her waist. She lifted her other hand toward a doorway at the rear of the small room used as kitchen, dining room, and living area.
Thank you for coming, she mumbled to Richard,
but she broke down in tears before she could finish. Yannick ran for the back room.
This way, Lord Rawl.
Richard squeezed the woman's arm to reassure her as he swept past, following Yannick. Colin still gripped his other hand. Nadine and Dreffen followed on their heels, with Kara and Reyna close behind. Yannick balked at the bedroom door as the rest of them entered. A single candle on a small table struggled to ward off the shroud of darkness. A basin of water and soapy rags stood vigil beside the candle. The rest of the room, mostly taken up with three pallets, seemed to be waiting for the candle's diligence to flag, so night could seize the room. A small figure lay on the far pallet. Richard, Colin, Nadine, and Dreffen crowded in beside it. Yannick and his mother, silhouetted by the light from beyond the door, stood at the brink of the darkness, watching. The room stank like rotting meat. Dreffen pushed back the hood of his flaxen cloak.
Open the shutter so I can see.
Kara drew both open and folded them against the wall, allowing the light to flood into the tiny room and reveal a blonde-headed boy covered to his neck with a white sheet and blanket. The side of his neck, just above the sheet, was grossly distended. His uneven breaths rattled.
What's his name?
Drefin called back to the mother.
Keep,
she said in a whining cry. Drefin patted the boy's shoulder.
We're here to help you, Kip.
Nadine leaned in.
Yes, Kip, we'll have you up and about in no time.
She put her hand back over her mouth and nose against the smell of rot that gagged them all. The boy didn't respond. His eyes were closed. His sweaty hair was plastered against his forehead. Drefin drew the bed covers down to Kip's waist, below his hands resting on his stomach. The boy's fingertips were black. Drefin stiffened.
Dear spirits, he breathed.
He rocked back on his heels and touched the back of his hand to the legs of the two moored Sith towering behind them.
Get Richard out of here,
he whispered urgently.
Get him out, now.
Without questioning, Kara and Reyna thrust hands under Richard's arms and started to pull him up. Richard jerked away from their grip.
What's going on? He demanded. What's the matter?
Drefin wiped a hand across his mouth. He glanced over his shoulder at the mother and Yannick. His gaze took in the rest of them before settling on Richard. He leaned closer.
This boy has the plague.
Richard stared at him.
What do we have to do to cure him?
Drefin lifted an eyebrow. He turned back to the boy, elevating a little hand.
Look at his fingers.
The fingertips were black. He pulled the bed cover aside. Look at his toes. His toes were black. He opened the boy's trousers. Look at his penis. The tip of it was black, too.
That's gangrene. It rots the extremities. This is why they call it the Black Death.
Richard cleared his throat.
What can we do for him?
Drefin's voice lowered even more with incredulity.
Richard, did you hear what I said? Black Death. People sometimes recover from the plague, but not when it's this advanced.
This is the end of this cassette. This book is continued on cassette number 5. You should adjust your balance control to the full left position and continue listening on part A of cassette number 5.